Okie dokie. Bye. Alright. Here we are. Off we go. Recording. New phone. Which is actually quite good. You know, sometimes it's just a question of time. I got this one for free. And, well, no, I didn't. I had to sign a 2-year contract again. Which I'm always a little reticent to do. But I'm told that, I hope they weren't lying to me, I'm told that given the fact that that if I move, which will be the reason why I dump the service, if I move, I'll, you know, that's how I get out of my contract. So, I don't know how I prove that I move, honestly. But, anyway. Oh, boy. I find I have to breathe a lot. That what I used to be able to do, just because I didn't know about things and about people and about things like that, that used to just, you know, whiz right past me. Lately, I'm having to, almost try to find some kind of zen place, you know. To deal with them. And this is a rather somewhat recent phenomenon. Not like I, you know. It's almost like a, I don't know. Anyway. So, yeah. I find I'm much more willing to let people be themselves. You know, warts and all. Where in the past, I think I expected more out of them. But when you see people, you know, you kind of go, well, sadly, having rather low expectations of people, they sadly live up to it. I hope I don't do that for my children. I hope I don't do that. I actually have quite high expectations for them. Anyway, so it seems really interesting. As the year progresses, I'm seeing more and more of these big, huge recreational vehicles. And, I, did get the money for this, honestly. It worries me on a certain level, you know? Because people end up, I don't know where they get the money from. Because, people have got a lot of money around here. And they go, are you sure? Or are they just doing it all on credit and hoping? You know, I don't know. For all I know, everybody does better than I do. That I'm the fool, or that I'm just lazy, or five other things. And, we live very, very tight. I'm not going to change. I listen to Jack Benny for a few minutes every morning. Not really very long at all. Thank goodness Jack Benny's a little rapid fire, you know. He doesn't. So, even if you listen to a minute or two, it's enjoyable. Because he's got jokes going. I mean, he's got running gags too. But, there's just little things. Anyway, so. I think I'm cheap kind of at his level. But I think marriage moderates it. At least it takes care of what needs to be done. I mean, I can treat myself as aesthetically as I want to, you know, as far as I'm inflicting on other people. I guess that's my biggest thing. And where it's like, oh, Jay, government run by you would be horrible. And you go, you know, this is my biggest problem would be being too lenient to the people and being far too harsh to government, you know. Well, I think the propensity now is to be lenient as you can to government as a leader and being quite harsh on the people. I can't trust them, but I can trust this because this is mine. It's my little domain. You know, the getting out of favors. Stuff like that. And, if anybody has a problem, it's only definitely himself. He doesn't tolerate this stuff. Not much really in the head to talk about. Yeah, I was talking before about the whole thing that the money and the life's work may be separate. Kind of a concept that Gary North talked about, and I think which is pretty generally known not to be rude at all to Jerry North for bringing it up. We have to have people bring it up. It helps confirm what we think, but also helps to spread the idea, which is important. I talked about this between your occupation and your calling. And I was thinking that that might be so, looking at the patriarchal blessing, or hadn't looked at it in a while, and thought there might be a separation. You know, one blessing for one action. And I don't think I've really looked at it so stridently to figure that out, but the question of means is tied to life's work. So the question, it begets the question, what is Jay's life's work? And of course I went off to Las Cruces here recently, and I've got the I get the sense that other people are far more invested in their jobs than I feel like I am. Although I get rave reviews, by and large, and you know, my voice side has far more to do with, you know, me not having to get involved in my territories. I handle my territories, period, you know. And I negotiate how it's going to be done, and I hear that, and you know, I go to other, I hear about other circumstances, and it's very, very different, and things. And I really don't even have a mind for what other people do. Another indication, I think, that I would make a bad manager, a bad administrator, because my aesthetic-ish expectations of myself, I get the impression at times that that can't be expected of other people. You know, other people have to be driven, other people have to, you know, be shown the way, stuff like that. And yeah, am I out of the loop quite a bit? And you go, yeah, you know, do I look at emails that come in? And the first filter is, does this have any relevance to what I do? And it doesn't. You know, there's a new, for the extension agents, there's a new contact reporting system that they're putting into place. And like anyone, it's quite onerous. You have to write down every contact you have. Yeah, you're supposed to record it. I don't know how many of them actually do, to a certain extent. I think most of them don't. At least not to the level that they would like it to be done. Because it's onerous, you know? Wretched stuff. Anyway, so... But I get the impression that other people are getting themselves up to speed about it. They can offer technical support on it. And my philosophy is, it's a web-based app. You go, my job is to make sure that you have the internet. My job is to make sure that things go well that way, you know. That it's really a question of the other guy's help desk to make it work, you know. And if their software is so crappy that it requires this adjustment setting on this web browser and this adjustment setting on that web browser, then it's bad software. Now, there's nothing you can do about that. And it's not really interesting who's to blame for it. So I don't really get into that. At least I don't think I do too much. And, what do we need to do? A lot of things get handled in the wash, trust me. A person's putting out a product, doesn't want to make it difficult, although I know a few. There's a piece of software called ShowWorks. It's very vertical. It's a fair management software. It's done by basically one guy. He's done almost all the work on it. And you can tell that he's kind of moving toward more of a web-based way of doing things. It used to be very decentralized. You know, you'd have to set up this weird network this certain way for the software to work among different things. His system is so complicated that it seems like almost every installation that gets done has to be specially done, has to be custom crafted to the circumstance, which is always a bad idea, you know. The computers that you use have to be left practically wide open. It doesn't work very well with Windows 7 at all, with the updated stuff. It's becoming one of those kinds of things, and he's getting to the point where I'm sure he would love to get bought out. He would love to find a way to get somebody else to buy his software. Or buy him, buy his company. But frankly, I think, you know, I think if somebody else came in with a different paradigm, one that was a little more web-based, they would wipe him right out. They would wash him right down the toilet without any problems at all. And that would really end up being and his company would fall apart almost immediately to the point to where he'd just say, I'm not doing this anymore because, you know, I'm not doing this anymore. His software was never networkable at all. You know, the fact that he could fake it by having file locks take advantage of it. It's all based on access databases, which, you know, were quite state-of-the-art a long time ago. in the different paradigm of the time, which was you had one PC that you would do, you know, there would be a discrete PC for a function, and people don't operate like that. And I think I was the first one to come back and say no. I said, that's no. You know, well, we need to be able to run this on our computers. And my basic answer was, I'm not getting involved in it. Well, you always get sucked into it because their technical support guy needs to talk to somebody else who's kind of a technical support guy to make these huge changes that need to be made on a regular basis, because it's always breaking, it's always having problems. You know, we need to open this thing up a little further. It's not letting this transaction happen. And I just say, you know what? I said, you know, this, number one, it was a stupid thing that extension offices got involved in. I said, it's really up to fair boards. Fair, you know, you shield the pain of using this stuff from fair boards who actually end up doing this stuff. You know, and then they figure they're doing favors. And you go, you're not doing any favors. I said, because you don't pay the price. I pay the price. And you go, I'm not doing that. So a lot of the people have either told the fair board that it's their problem. If they want to run it, they can run it. Fairs are starting to peter out anyway, to be honest. You know? Sadly, it's one of the bigger functions of extension. Or it used to be one of the bigger functions of extension. Now it's not. The ag agent is becoming more and more, it's funny, because in a political way, the ag agent is what makes extension keep running. The real cash cow of extension is your 4-H program. You know, that's what you're going to spend the bulk of your time doing if you're going to keep things up. So it's really interesting. Almost everything in extension is one or two off from reality, you know. What justify it the most are the things that are needed the least. It's weird, you know. It has more to do with politics than it does with reality, you know. And home economics is probably the most backed part of extension for just being able to range out into so many fields, you know. It's probably the most visible part of extension that actually serves the community. And yet it is totally disrespected to a large degree by extension, because extension is run by ag sorts, you know. Which is where all the research is coming from. You know, the research isn't coming from the female touchy-feely social side. You know, the research is all about, you know, ag stuff. So it's all very, you know, it's all twisted around. It's this crazy mishmash of stuff. It harkens back to old times and old attitudes. I'm sure it was rather straightforward when it was created. and now it spends its time fighting desperately for relevance. It's kind of a scary outfit to work for, you know, for the fact that it could fall straight on its face one day. But it's actually pretty well politically connected, because politics moves slow. Ranchers and farmers are still very, very politically powerful in many places. And, you know, it's, it's a really weird system. You know, I'd say if I were running a government, that's one of the first things I would get rid of, are things that kind of smell of cooperative extension for just being, you know, we need to move on. This program is so irrelevant. It's weird. You know, 4-H, which ends up being in kind of cooperative competition with other youth organizations, which are going away as well. It's slicing up a smaller and smaller piece of the pie, you know, and it, they pulled the same stuff that Boy Scouts did in the 70s, you know. It tried to be all things for all people, you know, trying to fit everything into its paradigm. That's why you had merit badges for everything in Boy Scouts. You had a babysitting merit badge, you know. I'm not denigrating that. That was just kind of the philosophy it had. And then it got back to camp, you know. It almost got to the point to where camping wasn't even a part of the program, and they brought it back and said, no, this is basically a going out into the outdoors and camping sort of a thing. And I think 4-H did that. You know, it really ended up being that the interest of the individual leader became how 4-H looked locally. You know, and that's probably fine. You know, the fact that it's government-backed and government-supported is a little weird when you're surrounded by private groups that do the same thing. Your Farm Bureau, which was totally a commercial insurance outfit, you know, used kind of a club motif for it. You know, he would join the club. There was an auxiliary where the girls would get together. There was fun kind of kids auxiliary and stuff like that. You know, the 4-H club run by the government and the Future Farmers of America, which is a quasi-school-based thing. They do almost entirely the same thing. In fact, in most rural places, a choice is made as to whether you're going to put more effort into Future Farmers of America, or if you're going to put it into 4-H. Of course, you know, there's FCCLA, which has really kind of walked away from its rural roots at all. These are the future homemakers of America. As a home economist, a very young one, I got pulled into a few FHA things. But the whole thing, you know, it's really interesting. The scope of what once was home economics has just exploded. Now there's several different fully fledged disciplines that grew up from what was essentially home economics in the past. Agriculture has shrunk and focused harder and harder in scope. You know, I'm not saying this is a size issue. Agriculture is still huge, you know, and I see no reason why it would stop being huge. Now, the fact that your local kid is going to get involved in agriculture in any significant way is probably not very, you know, it's not likely to happen. You know, huge corporations do this stuff, and what once was agriculture is now more factory work, and you can hire almost anybody, put them through a short training program, and they function as a cog in that big wheel. So, you know, that's really the difference between the two things. You know, agriculture as an individual thing, where some kid says, "Yeah, I went to school, I studied agriculture," and then he said, "I got into pigs, and I raised pigs," and you go, "That's, you know," I said, "That's irrelevant, you know. It's almost gone the way of the dodo for just not, you know. We just don't do things that way, you know. The production of meat or grain or vegetables is now a factory thing. It says, and we hire the cheapest labor we can. We don't require braids. We just require certain repetitive motions going on." And, you know, you tend to get to the cheapest labor you can, which is mostly immigrant labor. And so, yeah, I said, there's only really two ways to go about agriculture if you're a small producer. Number one, you get big and you go factory. Says, or you get out and you find something else to do. You know, you become a salesman that goes around to the big corporate farms trying to sell them on one process or another. You know, and it gets more and more difficult to do over time. You just kind of say, well, you know, there's nothing to do. And home ec has been split off into several disciplines. There's really nothing left in the original thing except a weird sort of political activism. You know. And you don't need anybody that specialized there either, you know. Any particular political activist can be hired, and you just tell them, well, today instead of you promoting a candidate, you're promoting this sort of food stuff. And they go, that's fine, it's all the same to me. And it really ends up being all the same to you, because those actions have nothing to do with the product. It has everything to do with pressure and stuff like that. Anyway, so and down there in the middle, occupying some weird little side place that really ends up just kind of being a weird throwback to the past, you have the Cooperative Extension Service. Big corporate farms don't bother going to it. your ag agent tends to get more into people concerned about their lawns or their fruit trees in their front yard, you know, which is, hopefully their training is more steered that way instead of saying, no, I'm a rancher and I'm a good rancher and that's what I do. I advise people on cattle. And you go, then you are a purposeless person, you know. Because, trust me, those guys are going out and they're getting what information they need from very large sources. And it has nothing to do with their local county extension agent. It's just not, you know, it's not even interesting. You know, kind of gotten down to trying to support the concept of do it yourself, which is great. It's a great thing, but it's getting to be a pretty small sliver of society, and however much money you're throwing into it to make it happen, that's money where you can easily just sit there, scratch your head and go, you know what? I don't know why we don't just get rid of this person. That we don't really need this. That we're not going to get into this kind of stuff. The only way it works is on the very, very local level. It's getting more and more like that. Where small scale, individual farmers and ranchers, and crafters, that's, you know, let me tell you, the most successful home ec programs, I think, either get down into health issues, because that's what people want, is help with their health, and crafters. And I know health people, which I would have probably gravitated more towards as a home economist if I would have been put into this stuff. I would have gotten more into the, we're going to do health and stuff like that. Leave crafting up to just bringing together crafters and programs that they desire. Getting much more into, you know, child development or whatever, even though I'm not big on these things. Not that I don't care about children. I'm not really big on child development, but identifying problems early and getting early intervention. There's already programs that do that. That don't require me. You know, I'd be more like, let's set this thing up and let's get it going. It's almost like how to access people of a certain inclination and get them involved in something. And as the rural population continues to shrink because it's not needed. It's irrelevant. People don't make money out of it. You know, when you said farm families, it used to be a pretty large population. Now it's quite small. Still powerful, because even though there's only a family here and a family there that do it, they've grown larger and their investments are much bigger and their risk is much bigger too. It's really quite interesting. And, anyway. That old bird's shaft, whatever it is. Is that a roadrunner? I didn't think it was around it, but I think it is around it. There's a lot of rabbits up here. Anyway, so, yeah, it's really kind of a hard thing to work for, because you know, I said, I struggle with dealing with what I consider to be irrelevancies, dealing with, you know, what I consider to be museum pieces. I think the Cooperative Extension Service is trying not to be that way, but it's really quite difficult because, you know, its basis for its existence and its continued funding is anachronistic. I think most of its continued existence is based on, you know, well, my grandpappy was in 4-H and my mom was in 4-H and good golly, I was in 4-H and my kids are going to be in 4-H too. you know, it's kind of like the whole Mormon love affair with Boy Scouts, which I think is just going to have to fade away. Actually, I don't think it can just fade away. I think it has to have a clean break and say the LDS Church can't be associated with this. That's going to be a bitter pill for Boy Scouts to swallow, you know. It lost schools, you know, it lost schools a while back over the whole thing of God. You know, it wasn't secular enough. If it decides to let gays into the program, you know, it's trying to make a thing that says, no, each individual organization can make a determination of who it's going to allow in. And, you know, my whole thought is that just takes the heat off of the national group and throws it on to the individual PACs and troops who are not in any position to be able to wage war against somebody who concentrates on it. And you know the gay community is going to concentrate on it and tear it apart. You know, it doesn't want to destroy you. It wants to co-opt you. It wants to get yet another time-honored institution to sell its soul to you. And I said, you know what? I said, you guys are going to have to change the Scout Oath, the Scout Promise again. Drop out some stuff. Replace it with something else. And let me tell you, the gays are going to get weird and say that it's not just the point of not talking about it. You have to say that it's a good thing. You know, it isn't enough to be accepted. That's okay for a few years when they first start out and we're all being sweet and kind and if you just come along with us, we'll stop bothering you. But then in a few years, you need to put something in here that you can specifically point to that says, this says being gay is acceptable. I'm sorry. Being gay is not acceptable. I mean, you can say, oh yeah, I'm a guy, and I just, you know, other guys turn me on. And you go, that's not being gay. We can call that same-sex attraction, that's great. And thank goodness the brethren, the leadership of the LDS Church, I think they had some real inspiration there. So we can make a separation. For me, you don't become gay until you have engaged in the activity, which is having sex with somebody of your own gender. And you identify that way publicly. You know, which is all the vogue now, you know. Oh, you know, there's even people that are kind of publicity hounds. They proclaim themselves gay for the sole reason of getting that publicity. You know, they don't care if it's good or bad publicity, they just want publicity. Because that's their stock and trade, that's what makes them money. You know, there's money to be found in being the public face of something. You know, and for any activity, there's going to be somebody willing to pay you money to be a spokesperson for it. So, you know, these are people that throw themselves behind gay activism. The problem is now, so many people do it, and probably legitimately do it because they actually do live that lifestyle on a regular basis. It isn't as powerful as it once was because it's become so commonplace. You know, I said, people that will have sex with anything that will stand still long enough, that's, you know, that becomes, you know, well, I'm gay. And you go, no, you're not. It says, you're just, you know, pleasure dome seeker. It says, you'll do it with anything that will do it with you. It says, you know, I'm not trying to make gays look good because I'm sorry. It's just picking your flavor of perversion and sticking with it. It's just saying you like chocolate-flavored hemlock more than you like vanilla-flavored hemlock. You know, so it's not, it doesn't all of a sudden make you a better person because, oh, I'm not just doing any old hemlock that comes along. I'm picky. I've got standards. You know, I'm sorry. You just lost me right there. I don't think you have any standards at all. You know, everybody's got their issues that need to be overcome. Grow up, be a stronger person, whatever. I said, I'm sorry, being gay is not strong. Being gay is weak. I tell a story. When I was newly married, I used to have a problem with gawking at girls. You know, it wasn't necessarily a big problem when I was single. It wasn't a problem, you know, but once I got married, it was a big problem for my wife, and rightly so. You know, you make a commitment to one person, it should be that person. Now I'm going to make it bigger by saying, you know, for a guy, you need to make a commitment to a woman. That's how society progresses. And, well, I'm sorry, hey, you know what? There's some interesting things going on in France. They just finally passed, I can say, the gay marriage is legal. Their next step is to say that adoption by gay couples is legal. I was just thinking where this is going to lead to. I said, I think adoption is going to get much more chilled. Well, in the United States, an adoptive parent pretty much can decide where their child goes. You know, they can say no to this one. They can always take back their decision to do this. I go, you know what's going to happen? He says, what's going to happen is that governments are going to be pressured by the gay community to make adoption more favorable to them by insisting that people who give up their children for adoption don't have a choice as to who it goes to. You know, your county adoption person, or however it's set up in your locality, will pick up the child. And then, you know, I don't know if it'll be a lottery or something like that, but I'm sure it will be skewed more toward, you know, well, gays don't get treated well in society. They don't get enough kids. We have to rectify that. And, yeah, the majority of kids that are given up for adoption, or we might find that they start really going for really heinous CYFB child plucking out of homes activities and being really heinous. It already is that way in a lot of places, you know. And that those children, since they're wards of the state decides who gets to adopt them, those children will be given to gay couples. And I can't think for a moment that that's something that God would tolerate long at all. But that's, I can almost predict that's the way it's going to go, and that's how it's going to play out. You know, people say, hey, if we give them marriage, they'll leave us alone. You go, no, they won't. They said, they want the kids. They want built-in sex mates, you know. And pretty soon it's going to be, you know what? I said, gay people have to have sex on a regular basis. It's absolutely vital to their being. And I said, so all this stuff about pedophilia, it's gone, you know. You can't touch the adopted children who had no choice of gay people. Gay people are going to pleasure themselves on their children, and that must be declared an acceptable thing to do. It's going to be hard fought because it's a social norm that has been traditionally very rejected in the past. It says, but you know what? It's going to get opened up. It's going to get opened up, and people are going to say, oh, you know. As we give more and more children rights like adults, they said the primary mover behind that is so that there is a large group of easy marks for predators. So it's just as simple as that. And we're falling right into the trap as we say, oh, these kids are doing such heinous things, you know. We have to incarcerate them like adults because they're doing adult crimes. And you go, well, if we can treat them like adults, we can also say that they're being consensual. You know, and it's really easy to get a child to consent to something. As we strive more and more and more to give adult rights to children, that they can do whatever they wish, we get more and more, you know, it gets more and more sickening. He says, not yet. I'm going to catch on the road. You know, that I'm walking real fast, so it could be. So that's my prediction as to how things will go. Would having family, government help with that? Oh, yeah. It definitely would. because in family ascendancy, family culture would be honored. And if that family says no, children are not, you know, this is access to children is strictly regulated by the parents. You know, are you going to have sick stuff going on? Yes. Are you going to have perverse stuff going on? Yes. This is, but guess what? At least it's not being done with some weird official stamp of approval from a very large body, which is what we're going for. You know, I'm very sensitive to the fact that the only thing worse than evil is institutionalized evil, which is what we run toward in nation states. You know, the fact that you have a right to this and that, you know, pretty soon we're going to find some pretty sick things being introduced as rights, and that you cannot choose to withdraw yourself from it, you know. And that the family is going to be the great protector of those who want protection. You can't depend on a larger government entity to do it. They're too liable to be co-opted by very motivated groups who have enough money to spend, you know, to pay people handsomely to push forward their ideas. And everybody says, well, if you want to fight that, you're going to need to do the same thing. You guys need to pull together a whole crap load of money and pay somebody to do that. And you know what? So it's a hard thing to do. You know, there's so many different ways you can be destroyed. Nobody has enough money to give to all the causes that need to be contributed to save that. Plus, there's so many, you know, perversions so widespread. You could say, oh, well, there's so many more of you, you should be able to handle that. You go, no, there's not. Even if there was, it'd be diffused. And that's the biggest problem, and that's how they ultimately win, you know. It really comes back down to personal righteousness and how we inculcate that into people, you know. Family is the most effective way to do it. The community can be helpful. You know, I always find it funny when people talk about cults, and you go, hey man, the cult's the only thing that works. You know, most of the other guys come out with their churches and say, well, I wouldn't join that, that's a cult. And you go, you know what, if you guys don't become a cult too, you guys are going to become irrelevant. This is already, you know, major mainline, quote, Christian churches, and that's fine, that's their title. They can claim the title Christian, that's fine, are pretty accepting of nearly every perversion that's out there, you know. And they get that way in a variety of ways, for a variety of proclaimed reasons, but the effect is the same, you know. You can read the Bible all you want to, but, you know, we can't follow that, you know. If it says that sodomy is an abomination before God, we have to redefine sodomy, or we have to just say, you know, that's really old stuff, and we don't get weird about that stuff, you know. We're trying to save your soul through Jesus, and you go, yeah, through a lazy, swaying Jesus. I said, I don't buy into that crap at all. and that you guys feel you can get away with it because Jesus hasn't come down and yet stopped you from doing it. Well, if he wants us to stop it, we can just intervene. Oh, I don't know what their justifications are for that. I don't even want to explore them. It's not even interesting. Says, I really do think our only hope is to bubble up from the bottom. And that doesn't mean individuals. That means families. Joseph Smith wouldn't have lasted 5 seconds without a family that was prepared to support him. You know, so yeah, you know, when people say, oh, you guys are a cult, and you go, you know what, it says your only hope for survival is to become a cult as well. And it says, and every time you do something that's successful that keeps you guys together, that when you, where you stand up for a principle, if you have any, you're going to be exercising kind of what you guys think is the occultist nature. I said, you guys better, I says, instead of denigrating it, you guys should study it and copy it. I said, because if you don't, you're going to find yourself sucked into, you know, sucked into some kind of universal, you know, oh, we worship whatever. And he justifies everything we do because, you know, we've done this and we preach this. You find more and more people not having, you know, most of the modern churches, especially the mainline ones, Baptists, Methodists, stuff like that, ones that have walked away from every bedrock principle that they may have held in the past in order to remain relevant. You know, they've, you know, they said their biggest call is, you know, well, I was born a Catholic, I'll die a Catholic. So that's really all the Catholic Church has left. There's a few things they stand on, and good for them, you know. You say about the Mormons, well, you guys will take Confederates wherever you can. You go, yeah, they will. So when it comes back to scouts, it's like, I'm sorry, you know, we can't be a part of this anymore because you're walking away from the very morals that we demand. And you go, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not getting into that. You know, I said the church can do what it wants, but the church doesn't rule me. So, there's that. Off the fun adventure. Forever and ever. Amen. Cows. Where'd that come from? Okay. Back home. I don't know how we got mail here. We got mail.